If you're looking for transformational change on your parenting journey, go to the show notes and get my online course today.
Do you really want your kid being educated by, you know, the boy in the back of the bus, like somebody's older sister? Like, really, that's what we want? We have an opportunity here, and it's also an opportunity for connection and closeness. And when we talk to our kids, when the stakes are low, then as they get older and the stakes become higher, they're going to engage in these conversations with us again, because they know, I can talk to my mom, I can talk to my dad, I can talk to my grandparent, whoever it is, and get the accurate information so that I can make a really good choice in this situation.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today, I have a fun podcast for you. We are going to be talking about how to talk to kids about anything. And there are lots of tough conversations that we have with kids, and we're going to bring up a few of them today. But without further ado, I will let my guest introduce herself.
Well, hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Robin Silverman. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. And I'm a child and teen development specialist, and I focus very specifically on communication with children, how to have tough conversations with children that often trip us up. What are the tips? What are the scripts? What are the stories? What are the steps to have the conversations we absolutely must have with children on death, sex, divorce, failure, friendship, bullying, and everything in between, so that we can have the conversations that help kids to be able to navigate this world with confidence.
Having conversations with kids have always been a pain point for parents, right? I mean, I even remember, even just growing up, I remember hearing parents talking about, like, how am I going to talk to my kids about this? You expect for me to talk to my kids about this? So this is something that has always kind of been a challenge for parents. Why do you think it is so hard to talk to kids about these kinds of topics?
It's such a good question, because we all are united in that, just as you were saying, that it's very tough. Part of it, and this I talk about in my book, How to Talk to Kids About Anything, that we feel awkward talking about some of these topics because they don't feel very much like a conversation you would typically want to have with a kid about death, about sex. These are topics that feel very adult, and yet our kids really do need to know this information. Some parents believe that the conversations happen as a one-off, like the sex conversation with a capital T-H-E, or if you're going to be talking about death, it feels like, oh, I will cover it and then check it off. But it's not how it works. It's a series of little conversations that happen along the way. So, for example, even with something like sex, you might want to talk about consent and body parts and respect. All of those things happen before you get to the sex conversation. So believing that it's one conversation, believing that somebody else should be the one who talks about this conversation and this topic with your children, oh, it'll happen in school, it'll happen with the coach. It's not for me to say, what do I know about this conversation? I don't know how to talk about diversity, so I'll just let somebody else do it. And I think people often think that if they talk about it with children, the children will get an opportunity, or think they have an opportunity, to do the behavior that they don't want that child to do. If I talk about porn, then they're going to try to find porn on the internet, which actually is the opposite of what happens. When we give kids the tools, when we talk about these tough conversations, then the kids are much less likely to engage in risky behavior. So we've got to get talking.
Okay, but Dr. Robin, I didn't grow up being talked to about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of had to figure it out for myself and, you know, with my peers, and we had conversations, and I figured it out and I turned out just fine. So why can't my kids just figure it out like I had to.
Now, I've been following you for a long time, so I know that that was baiting me, because the just fine thought, like, really just fine? And what we're finding with studies is that kids actually really do want to talk to their parents about these tough topics. You're the trusted source. So if you're not talking about it, somebody else may be doing it for you, like the peers. And honestly, were your fifth grade peers the most wonderful, knowledgeable, sensitive people to talk to you about these topics? Probably not. And they may have given you a lot of misinformation. So I agree with you. I found out about sex from like listening to my friends. And if we were reading the book Forever by Judy Blume. Yeah, absolutely. But when we give our children accurate information and also from our perspective, our value system, then we're helping our kids to develop the voice inside their heads that reflects something that is truthful, that works for their development, that is sensitive to the way that they learn. This is really important. Do you really want your kid being educated by, you know, the boy in the back of the bus, like somebody's older sister? Like, really, that's what we want? We have an opportunity here. And it's also an opportunity for connection and closeness. And when we talk to our kids when the stakes are low, then as they get older and the stakes become higher, they're going to engage in these conversations with us again, because they know, I can talk to my mom, I can talk to my dad, I can talk to my grandparent, whoever it is, and get the accurate information so that I can make a really good choice in this situation.
Okay, so how do we actually talk to kids about this? Okay, so you brought up sex. Like, how do we actually have those conversations? You mentioned that it's an ongoing conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, conversations around respect and consent need to come first before you have kind of the big talk that is accompanied with other talks. But what is that? Do you have, you've written a whole book on this.
So I did.
You have some kind of ideas of how do we actually talk about this? Is there a framework? Break it down for us.
So, yes. And once we get our heads around the idea that these are a series of little conversations, it takes a lot of pressure off. And so I'm going to just give you an example from my life, because I think a story can be extremely helpful here. So my mom, when I was little, and I started asking questions, actually about periods, she actually gave me a book on sex, and it was like a children's book. And it was like, it was like, turn the page, you're like, raccoons do it. And then the next page, we're like, kangaroos do it. And then you turn the page, you're like, I don't know. It was like all the different animals. And then at the end, there was a picture of a mom and dad, like in bed with the covers up. And it's like, and mom and dad do it too. You're like, oh gosh. And my mom peeked her head in the door and she was like, do you have any questions? And I'm like, oh, no. Okay, I'm good, right? So that was our only exchange. I'm talking to kids about sex there. When my daughter started asking questions, she had already had so many conversations with me about all the different body parts, because you have to start there. When our kids know their body parts, the research says they're much safer because they can actually speak directly about what's hurting them, maybe somebody who touched something that they shouldn't have, how they can protect it, how they can take care of it. And they know accurate information. When we give nicknames like cookie to something that is needs to be called by its real name, then your kids are not actually getting the information they need to convey what they need to us, to medical professionals, to teachers, to whatever. We also need to talk about consent very early. We're talking about tickling. We're talking about hugging. You talk about this too. Do we really need to give somebody a hug and a kiss when we don't feel comfortable? Like, these are things that we start off with throughout time. You can have that conversation with a three-year-old, a two-year-old. Like, you know, how do you want to say hello to your teacher? Do you want to shake hands? Do you want to give a high five? Do you want to give a hug? What do you want to do? Even, can I pet this dog? These are just information that we're giving them so that they know they don't just go at something because it comes into their heads. So as we're getting older and the children are getting older and they're starting to ask questions like, but how is a baby made, then you're talking about the sperm and the egg, and you can talk about adoption, and you can talk about all the different conversations of how this works. Because we adopted both of my kids, so we had a very nuanced conversation about how babies came to their families. And when my daughter was about 8 years old, she said to me, so when I want to get pregnant, I'm going to go to the doctor, and the doctor is going to help me to get pregnant, like you tried to get pregnant before you wound up adopting. And I was like, oh, wait a second. Like I didn't follow through with this conversation. And here it is. She wanted to know, how does the baby get in there? And that's when you really got to dive in deep with the mechanics of things. But know that that conversation of mechanics that we have, I call it pre-worried about, when we are pre-worrying about that conversation, because it's like, I cannot believe I'm going to say these words. I'm going to say penis. I'm going to say vagina. I hope you've said this for a long time already by this point, but if you haven't and you're listening to this, it's okay. Don't worry. And let's not shame ourselves. Just like, take a deep breath and realize, like, okay, we're going to start having some more of these conversations. And when you get my book, you'll see it's really actually quite easy. So when we are having the conversation about the mechanics, she already knew a lot of what I was talking about. I already talked about the sperm and the egg. I already talked about different body parts. And the conversation we had actually lasted for about an hour, but the part on mechanics probably was like maybe 8 minutes long. The rest of it was so interesting about more how consent works and who you would wind up with and romance and kindness. And she actually said to me, so what you're saying, Mom, is that I shouldn't be with somebody because they think I'm cute. I should be with somebody when they really love me for who I am. And I was like, my work is really going well here now, because that's what do you want your children to be saying in their heads when it comes time for them to make that choice? Do you want them just to know the mechanics? Do you want them to know that they're worth something? They're enough as they are. They don't have to do anything they don't want to do. They have to listen to the other person. Yeah, we want all of that. And we can start now.
Mm. That's powerful. And I think about, you know, I'm thinking about my own parents. We've had kind of reflective conversations in the past about how my dad felt completely uncomfortable with having any kind of conversation at all with us about sex or anything in that realm. And my mom really wanted to have the conversation because her mom really had a conversation with her. And so she, for her, was really important to have the conversation with us about sex and start those conversations early. And I think about someone with like my dad, who's never even thought about having those kind of conversations before. And now maybe they're listening to this for the first time. Someone sent them this podcast and they're like, oh, maybe I need to start having this conversation. And that pre-worry that you talk about sets in, right? Of just like, mm-hmm. I'm worried about, like, am I going to say the wrong thing? Do I even know what I'm talking about? And I think that is a big part of what stops people from even starting the conversation. Because I think that a lot of times once you start the conversation, you have a little some framework going in there. These conversations aren't typically as hard as we make them out to be in our
head. Yes, yes.
But do you have any advice for kind of tending to our nervous system when we have those pre-worries, how we kind of overcome those pre-worries so we can at least start to try to have the conversation?
I love that you're using that word, because it's just something that I think it captures how so many people feel, parents, educators, grandparents, when they're about to have these types of conversations. And you're absolutely right. We often pre-worry ourselves into a tizzy, and it actually turns out the conversation I had with my daughter was one of the best of my life. Like, I still remember it so vividly, and she's 14 now. And it did lay the groundwork to so many other really good conversations, and to the point where she says, I really tell my mother everything. You know, I my mom and I are cool like that, as she says, which is awesome. So what I would say to parents and educators or anybody who's trying to have these conversations with kids or knows now after listening to this or reading my book or listening to my podcast that they have to have these conversations in order to equip their kids is that you can mess up. You can mess up many times. You may have already messed up. You may be listening to this and be like, oh my gosh, my daughter asked me that same question. My son asked me that same question. And then I shut them down or I changed the subject to who wants ice cream? And we've all done that. Like I've been there. Absolutely. I'm sure you've been there with your own conversations where you stuck your foot in your mouth and you went, oh, oops, I messed up. Okay. We've all been there.
Yeah.
But when we mess up, understand that parenting typically provides the ultimate do-over. We can always try again. We can go back to our kid and say, you asked this question the other day about death or porn or sex or failure, and I changed the subject. I felt uncomfortable. I felt awkward. I'm sorry about that. You deserve to have accurate information, and I want to give it to you. So can we start again? Or I said something and I reflected on it and I realized I don't feel that way at all. Like actually, I was just repeating something that somebody else told me and I did some more investigation and I want to try to have this conversation with you again. Or you asked me a question and I answered with a question and I never actually answered you at all. So whatever the mistake was that you made, it's okay. You're human. And you go forward trying again. You never have to say to yourself, I messed up. There's nothing I can do about it. And I'm done. And we're, you know, shut the book. There's always an opportunity. And you can give yourself some grace here. We're going to mess up. I have said things even today, you know, to my daughter, to my son, that I would go, ooh, I wish I had said that differently. You can say that. I wish I had said that differently. Let me try again.
Yeah. And if you've been here for a while, you probably heard me say, avoid being a perfectionist, be an improvementist. The goal isn't to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve a little every day. And I want to kind of shift topics a little bit. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can help us out with another difficult topic. My hope is that if we talk about a few different difficult topics, people can start to kind of see the pattern here. And then no matter what the difficult topic is, you will feel confident in at least starting and trying to talk about it with your children. So that's another common one. Something that is pretty common in our lives is sex and life. And another one is death. So let's kind of move to the other end of the spectrum here. And how do we have a conversation, maybe a grandfather died, right? Or someone in their lives died that they knew. How do you, or maybe it's a classmate, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's even a little brother or sister or, you know, something like, how do you have this tough conversation?
It's a really tough conversation because as we mentioned in the beginning, when you first started interviewing me, that sometimes conversations like this feel so out of line with the joy of childhood. Like we don't want to make our child upset. Therefore, we don't have these conversations with them. It makes complete sense. Our hearts are absolutely in the right place. So I would say anybody who's listening right now who has younger children, you're at the time of parenting gold with this topic, where you can actually have a conversation with your young child just walking in the park. You see a bug on the ground, it's a dead bug, and you can say, do you know why that bug isn't moving? And just start the conversation. The leaves are falling. Why are they falling? The leaves are dead. Let's talk about that piece. You can talk about the plant that died, something that feels like easier to talk about, where you come across the bug and you say, do you know why that bug is not moving? Is it sleeping? No, it's not sleeping. That bug is dead. You use the actual words, because when we say things like, it went to sleep for life, or it's probably just sick and has the sniffles, then it can scare a child because they start to equate illness, like, oh, this person's sick, or I'm sick, am I going to die? Or am I going to go to sleep and not wake up? Let's be accurate. Okay. Yeah. So the bug is dead, or the bug has died. And what you're seeing right now is just the bug body. Now, the bug is not feeling any pain. It doesn't sleep. It doesn't eat. When we die, none of our systems work anymore. Nothing works anymore. We feel no pain. And that's just the little bug body, but not the bug anymore. So that when the dog dies, it's going to make a lot more sense. They didn't go to the farm. They didn't take a vacation. They didn't go to sleep. They died. And remember what that means. It means that your little buddy is not feeling any pain. Remember how much pain he was in. He was so old and he was feeling so much pain, and we were giving him all that medication. Now he has died and he's feeling no pain, and he doesn't eat and he doesn't sleep anymore. And we can remember him all the time in our dreams. We can think about him. We can tell stories about him. Would you like to draw a picture of him? I'm feeling very sad. How are you feeling? And opening up that conversation, understanding that questions are going to be part of it, asking, how do you feel? This is how I feel. What would you like to do to honor your pet? When our dog died at age 16, it was a long time and we were all extremely sad. We planted a tree. We said kind words about the dog. We painted rocks. We put them around the tree. We put it in the backyard because that was his favorite place. So you can commemorate your pet. And then when a grandfather dies or somebody close to you dies in your family, again, you have something to stand on where you know the conversation. You've had some of these conversations. I did an interview on my podcast, a girl whose brother died. And so anybody who is really interested in understanding the sibling perspective, I talk about it in the book too, because it was one of my friend's sons who died, and it was awful and extremely challenging. And I have a lot of her information in there in terms of how we were able to talk about it, what parents need to know, and what we need to know from siblings, because it is much more complicated when you're dealing with somebody who's so enmeshed in your family. It's not the same thing as when, you know, the bug, the neighbor dies. There's a lot more to it.
So what I'm hearing is start small and start and that was the kind of same thing with the sex conversation.
Yes.
Start small with small little things. There's small little conversations. With the death conversation, could be a bug, mm-hmm. right, that you see, and that might evolve into conversations about a pet, mm-hmm. That you might have, or maybe someone there that you might know. And then that will help in the conversations when you have it with someone who is maybe a little bit closer mm-hmm. in the family. Right. Is that about right? A goodbye ritual kind of for the death of someone, some kind of symbolic thing or ritual or way to say goodbye and to kind of get some closure mm-hmm. on what happened.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We want to make sure that kids can process their feelings. Sometimes that can look very different from one child to another, as you know. One child may want to draw or paint or sing. Another child might want to plant a tree, get their hands in the ground, do something physical. Maybe your pet loved to go running in the park, and every birthday, you know, they run in the park or they do something commemorative like that. So what would work for your child, your family, and know that your way of processing may be different from your child. That's very important to understand, and that your child may grieve in a way that seems peculiar to you, because grief is not only sadness. It can look like all kinds of things. Your child can be running around one minute and laughing and then crying the next, or feel sad and sort of stationary and in the corner the next. Grief is, as Joe Primo said on my podcast, and he's the executive the executive director of Good Grief in New Jersey, he says it's like a roller coaster. It's up, it's down, it's all the way around. And he's telling us that when your child is grieving in all these ways, it's okay. It's not rude or wrong. Just know that you're giving them space to grieve in those ways. And they can commemorate the pet or the grandfather. They can have a special box where they put all their favorite memories of that grandfather in there with special pictures or tickets they went to with the ball for the ball game, whatever really works for them, so that they can take it out and talk about their grandfather whenever they feel like they're having that kind of moment.
So it sounds like it's not just processing feelings verbally, it's helping them process those feelings in a concrete way, yes, with something that's tangible that they can kind of touch and feel and look at.
Yes. And I love the stories too, right? Because even while we were talking, like I've told you some stories, stories can be extremely memorable. And when you think about your dog, you think about your grandfather, you want to be able to tell those stories. Sometimes people, when they're grieving, people go, oh, I don't want to talk about that person because I don't want to make them upset. We're not making them upset, right? We're remembering somebody who was very important to them. So beyond, I'm so sorry you're feeling sad. Would you like to talk about grandpa today? Would you like to go to the special restaurant we always went to with grandpa and remember him? Should we take out your special box right now? Should we write about him? Giving your child the room to explore that. And if you are feeling especially triggered by it, especially sad, that's okay. You can also talk to somebody else. You don't necessarily want to be processing this with your young child because they can't be responsible for our feelings, but we can talk to a therapist. We can talk to a friend. We can talk to a spouse. We can talk to people who understand, and you can be processing those feelings so that you can be available to your child.
Yeah. Would you recommend, before having this conversation with your child, processing your own feelings,
yes,
making sure that you kind of dealt with it yourself before you try to help your child deal with it?
Absolutely. And that's the case with death or, you know, very much anything else. I've had that exact same question when people ask me about body image. That can be very triggering for people. They can have a real history with frustration around their bodies. So make sure that you're processing your own feelings about your body, your own feelings about how you were raised to think about your body before you're talking to your child about it, because you don't want to hand off negative feelings about death, about sex, about your body, about failure when you haven't processed them yourself. So let's do the work and talk to people about it, open up those conversations, and then you can be more present for your child.
Okay, so this is going to be a conversation, since we're having this conversation right now. There's a conversation that a lot of people have been struggling to have right now. And I wonder what your kind of, how your framework kind of fits into this. And this is, you know, I think this is, you know, talking about what's happening in Palestine and Israel right now. That's difficult for a lot of us. A lot of us are still processing it, still trying to figure out kind of what to do, what to say, you know, how, you know, and while your three-year-old or your two-year-old may not be aware of what's going on, as children start to get older, they do become more aware. They do talk more about what's happening, you know, things that they've heard on TV or from their parents or, how do you kind of have this conversation with your child who is, and we're not, I'm not talking about a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 year old. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking kind of like 8 and older. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of start to have this conversation? You know, you talked about having these conversations in small bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. This seems like a really huge conversation that, You know, maybe you're just now learning about, you're just now, right. You're trying to get all the bits and pieces of information. And maybe you feel like you kind of have a picture of what's going on and you want to talk to your child about it. How do you do that?
Yeah, it's a tough one because we come with a lot of baggage about this type of topic as well. We may have our own perspective. People who are listening may have completely different thoughts about it. But if we can drop our own agenda when we're having conversations that are tough like this, it will help a lot. And by dropping your agenda, I mean, I want to have this full conversation. It's going to be a long one. It's going to be very in-depth. I'm going to give the history of this and that. This is probably not how to go into a conversation about something so tough. Let go and ask the question. There's been this war going on, this conflict going on, however you want to phrase that. And I wanted to know, what do you know? Just start there, because when you are listening, you're going to learn so much more than if you're closing off your ears and just talking. A conversation, if that's what you're intending to have, is between two or more people. This is not a soliloquy. You're not on stage. Mm-hmm. You're not in front of an audience as a professor. You're a listener and a part of a conversation. So get the temperature question. What do you know? Now we can start with something, because if your child knows nothing about it, you got to start there. And if your child says, oh, I've been talking about it with so-and-so at school, and so-and-so has a very different perspective than you do, that's mm-hmm. a different spot, right? What do yeah. they know? And what is, maybe they have a lot of misinformation. Maybe they think it's, you know, between a totally different country somewhere else. They may have misinformation, or they may think it's over or it happened, you know, because it was talked about and now it's not in their school, whatever it might be. So start with the question. Somebody once asked me, I was reading your book and I noticed a lot of your conversations end in questions. Yes, we are having a conversation here and we want to know our children's perspective. The next question might be, and how do you feel about that? How do you feel about what you've heard? Maybe they've been scared to bring it up. Maybe they've noticed you've been really upset about it, or they heard that their friend's parent was really upset about it. Maybe they heard about some of their friend's parents who went to Washington, D.C., and they had a different perspective. And then they heard about somebody who went over here and they encountered this problem. So what do they know? How do they feel about it? And then you can say, all right, well, do you have any questions about what is happening? If you don't know the answers, that's okay. You can look it up together. Make sure you're using a reputable source. You don't want to be getting just a one-sided source. You want to really know what's going on. So you may want to check several reputable sources. And then getting into the conversation more of, this is how I feel about what's going on, or I'm feeling kind of confused. Are you feeling confused? Here's why I'm confused. Or I'm feeling like two things at once. Two things can be true at the mm-hmm. same time. I'm feeling two things at once right now. I'm really, really upset about this, and I'm mad about that, and I'm frustrated about this, and where we're doing this and that. You can provide your values and your perspective while inviting theirs and understanding your child may have a different perspective than you, and knowing that you're not there to just simply push your agenda. That is not where we can be with our children if we want to have a long, thriving relationship that's connected and respectful. We got to open our eyes, open our ears, open our hearts to listening to what they have to say. Convey what we want them to know as well, if we have to correct anything, and also relay our values and underscore what we find important, and keep the door open to additional conversations. This is probably not one that's going to happen in one fell swoop. It's going to happen over a period of time, even if you're just starting today.
I feel like listening to this and listening to how you were talking about some of the other conversations, it's not even so much of we need to get them to this singular point of understanding right now. You know, I see huge value in just the process of talking to them about their feelings or talking to them about a topic and a conversation or a controversial topic. Because I think even just going through the process of, you know, asking questions and listening and understanding and not judging and not criticizing and kind of having this back and forth and letting them know that that when they do have a conversation with you, they do share something with you, you're not going to be criticize them and shut the conversation down and judge what they're saying. I think the process of that conversation to me is more valuable than the kind of product of that conversation. The fact that they learn how to come to you when they have a question or they're struggling with something or they understand or they're stressed or something is more valuable to me than that they even get, you know, that particular answer that you're hoping to give them. And I think that's what's so powerful about kind of the approach that you are sharing with us. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I love the way your mind works because you do see the nuances here. Absolutely. You're parenting for the long haul, as they say, not just in that moment. How do you want your relationship to go? How do you want this connection to be described? When your child is in trouble, they're at somebody's house, somebody starts drinking, and you want them to say to themselves, I got to call my parent because they'll know what to do, or they'll help me get out of this situation that I've found myself in. Not, I can't call my parent. They always jump to conclusions. They're going to judge me. I'm going to get in trouble for even being here. You want your child to think of you as somebody that they can consistently come to, a key adult in their lives who will be there even when things go wrong, even when you disagree, that you can disagree respectfully, and that they know that that's the kind of relationship that they want to have in their life as they go forward. They want friends who are like that. They want a partner that's that way. Yeah. You're giving them the template for that. This is not just in the moment to talk about this conflict, to talk about this divorce, to talk about this death, to talk about sex or consent. You're parenting so that when they are not with you in that moment, that they're thinking, I know how to process this. I know how to think about this. I know the questions to ask myself, or this relationship is not feeling good. This is not what I want for my life. I know what a good relationship feels like. I know what I should be looking for. I've talked about this. I've processed it with my parents. And now I'm going to stand up for myself. Now I'm going to find what feels right for me. You're parenting for the time when you're no longer there standing next to your child so that they're making good choices for themselves.
Mm. It's almost like this book could also be called How to Teach Kids to Process Anything.
Mm. Yeah.
Because in just the process of talking to them in these difficult conversations, you are creating the process of which, yet like you're just saying, when they're alone, when they're not with you, of how do I process this myself, right? You're doing it with them right now when they're young, so that as they get older, they know how to do it themselves. And even with these really difficult topics of just of saying like, I don't know the answer to that, like finding the right, how do I find information about that? How do I learn more about that? Is really, really powerful. And I think it's like a lot of topics that we have here on the podcast, that this is, these are skills that parents can learn that can contribute to really world peace. Because, you know, how else do we get there other than learning how to talk to each other, how to listen to ourselves, how to kind of process what's going on, process our feelings in a healthy way where we're not like judging or criticizing or attacking someone else. You know, I wish that everyone, like all of our politicians, had parents who, you know, knew how to talk to them.
Yeah, read the book, politicians. You know?
Right.
Let's get started. It's not too late.
It's not. I want to try to tackle one more, at least one more topic before we go, because I think this is another very common topic, especially post-pandemic, divorce.
Yeah,
right. That can be a really, really difficult topic because it's almost, it feels like you're almost losing, you know, your family's coming apart. You might feel like you're losing a family member. You might be in a situation where your, you know, partner is, you may not even have a great relationship with your partner for whatever reason. How do you have this difficult conversation with children? And maybe you can kind of give us some tips with like a variety of age groups too, because, you know, I think it can be just as difficult for the 3-year-old as it is for the teenager.
Yes. So, I think you're right.
So talk to us. How do we have this conversation?
So when we talk about some of those pre-talks, and you can start early with children, you want to talk about all the different types of families that people have. There's not just one family, not one that's better than the other. There are single parents. There are parents that are in a pair. There's parents that have intergenerational advantages in their home where they have grandmas helping, and you know, the Uncle Joe is there. It can be all different types of families. Some are created through adoption. Some are foster. Some are all the different types, so that kids understand there's not one way and one way isn't better than the other way. So first off, let's make sure we're talking about all the different types of families. And there's some great children's books out there. One from Suzanne Lang that talks about families. We've got one by Todd Parr that talks about families, all the different families. They're very visual, wonderful. So I would start there. When we are in a situation where the divorce is happening in a family, so maybe it's, you know, one of your sisters, your sister-in-law and your brother or whomever it is, and you have to start the conversation about what that means, it's really important to underscore that divorce ends a marriage, not a family. They still have a family. And that's something that we have to make sure kids know that they're not losing their family and they still have one. It just looks different. So can we explain to them that this is how things are going to look now? And you're going to be specific, just like we did with the death chapter, that we're going to be talking to kids about divorce in concrete terms. This is where Uncle Mitch is going to live, and this is where Aunt Sarah is going to live, and your cousins are going to be visiting each one of the houses, and this is what that's going to look like. Again, they're going to keep seeing their parents. They just aren't going to see them in the same way at the same time. Now, sometimes when we get together for the holidays, you might see Aunt Sarah there. Other times you might see Uncle Mitch there. They may not be together, but sometimes they may be together, like if we go to a school play. And you're just explaining what the layout is going to look like and then answering questions. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Do you have any questions about this? So that you're answering what your child actually wants to know and not just delivering information that they actually aren't interested in that moment and can't actually receive. The littlest kids, it's going to be really brief most of the time, even if it's happening in your family. If possible, you want both parents to be able to be present when they're talking to their child, their young child or their older child, about what's about to happen with their family, because you don't want it to feel one-sided. This is something that we've come to together. This is what is right for our family. I know that you don't want this, and this is why it's healthier for us to do this right now than to stay together. This is what we've done to try to make it work. but it's better for the family, the health and wellness of the family, which you know is really important. You've heard a lot of yelling. You've heard a lot of disagreements. You know that this is how it's been very stressful for the last year. This is the best way for us to start to address that and make it so it's not so stressful for you, your brother, and for us. And you're explaining what the process is. Dad is going to move here, I'm going to move there, and then we're going to do this together. And here is how you're going to see us. You can take out with the young children, this is so important to take out a concrete schedule so that they can see this is my name. This is where I'm going to see Dad. This is where I'm going to see you. And we're going to go through next week. You're going to stay with Dad. The following week, you're going to be with me, or this is how we're going to divide the week and have that posted so that the kid is very aware of what's happening and make sure that you go over it. Every Sunday, we're going to sit down and we're going to go over this schedule, and here's who's going to take you to soccer practice, and then you'll come over here and we'll have piano just like you did before. And one of the things that will always remain consistent is our love for you and the fact that you'll still be in the same school or whatever it is. You're going to see your teacher, Sally, every day. So you're giving them the consistency, you're giving them the changes, and you're making sure they're grounded in understanding the love and that your door is always open for more conversations.
Yeah. And it sounded like even as you're describing that, there was a big emphasis on making sure the child would know what to expect and what's going to happen. And for those out there too, I know that in particular, someone's named Sarah Ulsher, the person who I did my visual schedule with, Maddie and Brightco, she actually has a calendar for this specific reason for families, for like blended families, to help children kind of know what to expect. So if you're looking for a resource, find Mighty and Bright Co. Sarah Ulsher is her name. But you could just use a regular calendar. As long as for a younger child, I would, you know, kind of the bigger, the better. Might be hard for them. If you use like one of those small calendars, it might be hard for them to really process and understand. But if it's bigger, it'll be easier for them to process.
And there's an example of it in my book, actually, of an actual calendar. Like,
awesome.
This is the green family, and there's, you know, an M or a D for mom and dad, like who has it, something extremely easy to see with pictures. You can put pictures if it's a very young child of a piano, for example, and a D next to it. So just make it as easy as possible. And both people have the schedule. Oh, grandma has it too. Everybody has the schedule so that child can see it whenever they want.
Awesome. Any last words or recommendations you want to give to us before you leave? By the way, her name is How to Talk, or her book is How to Talk to Kids About Anything. Her name is Dr. Robin. Her name is Dr. Robin.
Yes, Dr. Robin Silverman. And you can go to drrobinsilverman.com for any of that information. It's Robin with a Y. I would just tell parents to take a deep breath, that I know that these conversations can feel daunting and difficult, but let me do it with you. There are stories you can tell that can make things, that can bridge the gap. There are small steps that you can take. You don't have to do it all at the same time. You don't have to get it all right. And sometimes you may not be the right person to talk to your child about that. And it's okay. Be the bridge to the correct person for your child. Maybe you are too triggered to talk to your child about something like sexual assault. Maybe you feel like you're not the best person to talk about divorce right now while it's too fresh and you need somebody to help you. Reach out to somebody else, your sister, your friend, enlist the help of a coach, a therapist. You don't have to do all of this alone. And young people, according to the studies, often don't feel that they have at least three people to turn to in a time of need or challenge. You can be one of the three. You also can have other people who are reinforcing that, other people who can be one of the three. So don't feel that you need to be doing this all by yourself. There are other people who can help. And sometimes those people may be a better person to talk to your child about a particular topic. And then you can say, hey, Aunt Jen, could you please talk to my child about this? You have such experience in this. I adopted. I didn't actually have a baby. She wants to ask you questions about pregnancy. Can you talk to her about pregnancy and your experience? You can enlist the help of others and just have the conversations. Have the conversations. You will be giving your child such a gift of the correct information, a gift of the truthful source, and a gift of your voice in their heads when they are facing something challenging. So go for it.
What's my name? What's my name?